If you'll be turning in your Bibles to John chapter 18, beginning in verse 37, we'll be ready to begin in just a moment. Starting in verse 37, Pilate therefore said to him, "Are you a king then?" Jesus answered, "You say rightly that I am a king. For this cause I was born, and for this cause I have come into the world, that I should bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth hears my voice." Pilate said to him, "What is truth?" Sounds pretty modern, doesn't it? You can almost hear the sarcasm in Pilate's voice as he says to this uneducated Galilean, "What is truth?" As if you know, as if anybody could really know what the truth is. A lot of Americans have this view. In fact, a few years ago I was talking with somebody about spiritual things, and I realized I was going to have a problem, because he believed that every point of view was equally valid. And so there wasn't any sense trying to talk to him about God or about the Bible, because he accepted it all as true. If you accept nothing as false, you really accept nothing as true. And so you have a problem. I didn't know how to talk to this guy. And so what I want to talk to you about tonight is the truth, and I want to tell you the truth about truth. And basically, we're going to talk about three things. That first, the truth about reality is knowable. You can know what the truth is. Second, that the opposite of true is false. I realize that might sound a little bit insulting, but a lot of people have trouble with this one. And then finally, that the truth really does matter. Philip Johnson, who is a known apologist for the Bible, he spends a lot of time researching and writing on topics related to the Bible, said this, "One who claims to be a skeptic of one set of beliefs is actually a true believer in another set of beliefs." And that's a very important principle for us to understand. Because people try to be tolerant. They say, "Oh, well, I just accept everything." Or they say, "Well, I don't believe anything." Both of those are a value system. They're not being tolerant. They really believe some things very firmly and disbelieve others. We have universities in our country. And that name implies that you take diversity and make unity out of it. You take all of these fields and you put them together in a complete picture so that people know the truth about a lot of different things. Unfortunately, what these have turned into are pluriversities, in that every view, no matter how ridiculous or silly, is equally valid. In fact, I took a lot of liberal arts classes when I was in college, and I thought the point of some of those classes was just to let every student express himself. That's all we did, sat around and talked. I didn't learn anything. And it all came out of this view that, well, every view is equally valid. In fact, if you've been following the news, you might have seen this week about the riots up at New York University. And the students had taken over the university center, demanding that the regents of the university meet their demands and giving account to them of how the university was run, and opened up several scholarships for Palestinians because Israel had bombed a Palestinian school. And this is the fruits of this kind of thinking that, well, if any view is equally valid, well, then we know how to run this university just as well as you adults do. Now, there's one exception to all this. If you find a person who believes that only one worldview or only one religion, especially Christianity, could be true, well, then you have a problem. You see, that person's view is not equally valid to yours. He is intolerant and a bigot. In fact, one of the things you'll hear people saying is, you know, intolerance is just something we cannot tolerate in our society. What? We're not going to tolerate intolerance. That's where this type of thinking has gotten us. That's why these things are important. Now, really, what we're trying to do, when we're talking about truth or any other matter, is to put together a puzzle. We're trying to figure out what the real state of affairs is. And for those of you who've done puzzles, you know that they come in a box. And on the top of the box is a picture. And it is a whole lot easier to put that thing together if you have that picture to look at than if you just start randomly trying pieces. Nope, that doesn't fit. Nope, that one doesn't fit. That's going to take a while. If you have the top of the box, things are a whole lot easier. Now, the five most important questions that any of us have to answer in life, no matter what your worldview is, no matter what your background is, are these. First of all, your origin. Where did we come from? Second, identity. Who are we? Third, the meaning to our lives. Why are we here? Fourth, morality. How ought we to live our lives? And then finally, our destiny. Where are we going after our lives are over, if anywhere? Now, the answer to all of these questions depends on whether God exists or not. If he does, there's a real right and a real wrong. There's a meaning and purpose to your life. And the choices you make here affect you now and also in eternity. If he does not exist, your life ultimately means nothing. There's no right or wrong way to live it. And we're all just going to turn into plant fertilizer in the end anyway. So it really doesn't matter. Now, why is it so unreasonable for only one religion to have the truth? A lot of people find that distasteful. They think that's intolerant and they're not going to tolerate it. Talking about truth and religion to some people is just talking about opinion. It's like saying, well, I like Pepsi and you like Coke, but I'm better than you because I like Pepsi. Well, that's nonsense. That's subjective. Or, you really ought not to judge me for my belief. You notice what they just did. They just judged you for judging them about their belief, but we won't worry about that. In fact, a lot of people believe it's just not possible for us to know any truth at all. In fact, when I was in college, my freshman English teacher told this story about these six blind men in India. And they were all examining an elephant. And so the first guy here was examining the trunk, and he decided that, oh, well, an elephant must be like a snake because it moves around and it's long and it slithers. And then the next guy had a hold of the tusks and decided that an elephant must be like a spear because you could hang on to it and probably throw it at someone. Then the next one examines the ear and decides, well, an elephant must be like a fan. And then the next one who's examining the leg thinks an elephant must be like a tree because it's thick and round and stands straight. And the next one who's feeling the side of the elephant thinks that it must be like a wall. And then finally the last guy thinks, well, an elephant must be like a rope. And the moral of the story is that in religion, we are all just like these blind men examining an elephant. We all have a part of the truth, but none of us have all of it. So it's no use being dogmatic about anything because we're all just blind men groping around and we cannot know what the truth is. And then finally, we have the view of the scientists who believe that only science can give us what the truth is. And we'll talk more about this a little bit later on. But you see, science deals with facts, religion deals with faith. And so there's no sense trying to gather a bunch of facts to prove the subjective, because facts aren't subject to that sort of thing. They won't help you. Now, before we go any further, we need to talk about the three major religious worldviews. And I realize some of you are looking a little bit confused. This will fit together in the end, I promise. I'm not just up here speaking randomly. You have theism, belief in a god. You also have pantheism. And then you have atheism. Theism says God made everything. The three major theistic religions are Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. Pantheism, they believe that God is everything. God is this rock. God is this piece of wood. God is the sky. God is the earth. God is everything. And so things like Zen Buddhism, Hinduism, the New Age movement, they all believe God is everything. And then finally you have atheism. And make no mistake, it is a religious belief. They believe there is no God at all. So that would be religious humanism. They end up worshiping man as the highest good, or they end up worshiping the earth as the highest good. Environmentalism is the religion of the atheist. Now, is this all just a matter of faith? Does it matter which one of these categories we pick? Because after all, it's just what we choose to believe. Well, religion requires faith. But it's not only about faith. Facts are central to every religion. Because all religions make truth claims. Now, many of those claims can be investigated through natural and historical investigation. For example, theism claims that the universe had a definite beginning. Genesis 1:1, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Pantheism and atheism claim that it did not have a definite beginning. The universe has always existed. Now, one of those is right and one of those is wrong. Any investigation we make into the origins of the universe is going to get us closer to what the truth actually is. It's not just a matter of faith. And also, science and religion very often address the same questions. Where did the universe come from? Where did life come from? Are miracles possible? These are not mutually exclusive categories because all of them make claims about the truth. And if truth is knowable, we can find out which one is right and which one is wrong. And then finally, there are those who have problems with Christianity. You have an obstacle when you're talking to anybody about being a Christian. Because, first of all, there are people with intellectual problems. There's evil in the world, and so I can't believe in a God who would create a world in which there is evil. And besides, most scientists disagree with you, and so Christianity can't be true. Then there are also emotional objections to Christianity. That is, well, you Christians think you're the only ones who are right, and everybody else is going to hell. I can't accept that. Or that, I knew a Christian one time, and he was just a hypocrite. He was one thing on Sunday, and he was something else the rest of the week, and so I'm not going to have anything to do with that kind of religion. And then finally, there are volitional rejections of Christianity, and that is the restrictions that Christianity seems to place on our moral choices that people don't like. You mean I'm going to have to quit drinking, and quit smoking, and quit doing all of these things, so I don't want anything to do with Christianity. Now, whatever you ultimately choose to accept, you're doing it based on faith. It's possible to be 95% plus certain about something and have enough information to make a decision. We do it all the time. In fact, that's really about the best that we can do. Based on our observations, based on our experiences, we can find out what is the most probable. We're never going to be 100% certain about anything. And so all we're trying to do when we're trying to pick between these worldviews or decide whether these objections to the Christian view are correct is find out what is most probable based on the evidence that is available. Whatever you accept on faith. For example, Carl Sagan was a famous atheist. He said the following, "The cosmos, the universe, is all that is or ever was or ever will be." Now, how could he possibly know that for sure, for 100% certain? He couldn't. All he's doing is using the evidence that he has, the scientific data and other things, and saying, this is what I think is most probable. That's what we're doing when we make the same kinds of claims. And so don't let somebody con you and say, well, I have science on my side. No, what you're doing is you're using evidence just like I am. But whatever you ultimately accept, you're accepting on faith. Now, it is possible to know the truth. In fact, we demand to know it. For example, our loved ones. Your teenager comes in at 1 o'clock in the morning. First question, where have you been? Now, do you want him to tell you the truth? Or do you want him to say, well, you know, Mom, truth is not objectively knowable, so why bother asking me? No, we demand to know where you have been. You better tell me the truth or you're going to be in bigger trouble than you already in. Doctors, we want the doctor to tell us what the truth really is. We don't want him to make something up. Stockbrokers, Bernie Madoff, anybody? We want them to tell the truth, don't we? courts. We go to court. We expect the court to balance the evidence and give us a true result. Now, the more law I study, the more I realize this is kind of a joke. But that's what we want. We want the court to do that. Employers. We want them to tell us the truth. Oh, this chemical you're working with, it's fine. It won't hurt you at all. We want them to tell us the truth about that, don't we? Airlines. Yeah, sure, this plane is flight-worthy. And teachers. We want them to tell us the truth. If a teacher in Knox County were teaching students that 2 plus 2 equals 5, there would be a problem. We wouldn't accept that. And we certainly wouldn't accept it as a defense. Well, you know, how can really know what the truth about 2 plus 2 is? That's ridiculous. Nobody knows what the truth is. She's going to lose her job. And yet, when it comes to religion, we suddenly cop out and say, well, you know, we can't know what the truth is. Augustine said that we love the truth when it enlightens us, but we hate it when it convicts us. Maybe the truth is that we can't handle the truth. We don't like what the truth is telling us. And so we're going to back up and say, well, we can't really know what the truth is about anything. That's very convenient. And so now I want to tell you the truth about truth. What is truth? Well, one definition is that which corresponds to its object. That doesn't help me very much. If you look up in Webster's, I believe it is, it says, truth is that which describes an actual state of affairs. Once again, that doesn't help me very much either. The third one I like better. Truth is telling it like it is. That's what truth is. It's just that simple. Now we need to understand that, first of all, truth excludes its opposite. If it is true that I am standing here right now, it cannot also be true that I'm not here. It excludes its opposite. Also, truth is discovered, it's not invented. We can't just make up what we would like the truth to be. We find out what the truth is, and that's what it is. Truth is transcultural. There are not different truths for different groups of people all over the world. Last time I checked, 2 plus 2 was still 4 in China. It was still that in Egypt. It was still that in Brazil. It's still that here. Your culture doesn't matter when we're talking about the truth. Truth is unchanging. It doesn't vary from day to day. It is what it is. Also, beliefs, and this is very important, cannot change the truth, no matter how sincere they are. Doctor tells a person, go home, you're fine, and he has terminal cancer. Well, no matter how sincerely that person believes, and no matter how happy he is, that, I'm fine, I'm going to be well and okay, the person's dead. No matter how sincerely he believes, he's healthy. He's not. The truth is not changed based on his belief. Also, truth is not affected by the attitude of the person professing it. And I think this is an important thing to notice, because we think, oh, you Christians, you're so narrow-minded, you're so bigoted, you're so mean, and you're so arrogant because you think you have the truth and nobody else does. Well, guess what? I might hold the truth in a way that is offensive and ugly and mean. It doesn't mean that it's not the truth. It means I'm going to be lost over it. But it doesn't mean it's not the truth. Also, all truths are absolute. It is true that I feel warm standing up here right now. That is true for all people, all everywhere, for all time, that I feel warm right now. Every truth that there is an absolute truth. So it's not the case that there are no absolute truths. The truth is that all of them are. And finally, contrary beliefs are possible. Contrary truths are not possible. Now, obviously, contrary beliefs are possible, obviously, or we wouldn't have anything to argue with our wives over, right? Contrary truths are not possible. Something either is or it is not. And we'll say more about that in a minute. Now, finally, if something is true, it's to be believed regardless of the consequences. What we would like to be true doesn't make it true. Personal tastes cannot negate truth. This goes to what Ron was talking about this morning when somebody says, oh, what if you're saying is true, then my grandmother is in hell. Well, we don't have to say, well, yeah. But just because you don't like it doesn't make it untrue. And we can't back away from that. Now, getting back to our story. Did you notice a problem when I was telling it earlier? How many people are really a part of this story? See, there's somebody I didn't tell you about. There's another perspective that has the truth, even in the story designed to tell us that there's no such thing as truth. The person telling the story. You see, the person telling the story knows it's really an elephant. You see, he couldn't know that all of these blind men were wrong unless he knew what the truth really was. And so even this story about the elephant, and I guarantee you, young folks, you're going to hear it when you get to college. The person telling the story could not know what was really right unless he knew it was an elephant standing there. If the blind men could see, they'd know it was an elephant too. We can't know what is wrong unless we know what is right. Now, can all religions be true? They can be partially true. All religions can have part of the truth, and all of them do. But none of them can be, or only one of them can be completely true, because they make contradictory claims. And so it is not true that religion is just different versions of the same thing. The blind men didn't have different versions of elephant. They had different versions of wrong. Only the person telling the story knew what the truth was. So why is it that people believe things? There are four basic reasons. And if you get nothing else out of this, just remember this. It will help you when you're talking to people, because if you can get them to think about why they believe things, it will go a long way to getting them to evaluate their behavior. First, there are social reasons. That is, well, my parents believe this way, or my friends believe this way, or society thinks this. Then there are psychological reasons. Well, it gives me peace of mind. It makes me feel good. It gives purpose to my life. Then there are religious reasons. Some Scripture says this, the pastor says this, a rabbi says this, and then finally there are philosophical reasons. And when you show somebody this chart, what you want to ask them is, what is a good reason to believe something? Well, is a social reason a good reason? No, it's a very bad reason. I mean, how many times did your mother tell you, well, if your friends jumped off a cliff, would you do it too? No, it's a very bad reason. Your friends can be wrong. Society can be wrong. Well, psychological reasons. Is that a good reason? Well, it gives me peace of mind. It gives purpose to my life. Well, it gave purpose to terrorist lives to blow themselves up and kill people. Is that a good reason to do it? That's not a good reason. And then there are religious reasons. Just because some preacher somewhere says something, is that a good reason? No! He could be wrong. The only valid reason for believing something is in this fourth category, and that is for philosophical reasons. That which is consistent, that which is coherent, and that which is complete. The best picture of the facts that you can put together, that's why you should believe something. For philosophical reasons, not because somebody else does, not because of the way it makes you feel, and not because somebody important told it to you. That's the only good reason. Now, I want to talk about two laws governing the truth, and then talk about how we find truth, and we'll be done. First is the law of non-contradiction, and this sounds big and important, but it's really not that hard. All it means is that contradictory claims cannot both be true. And, for example, let's say you meet one of your friends in the store one day, it's a husband and wife, and you say, hey, I heard you were expecting a baby. Is that true? And he says no, and she says yes. Now, what do you assume? Do you think, oh, well, okay, that's great. No, you assume either they misunderstood the question, or she hadn't told him yet, or maybe something else, but you know that they cannot both be right. That's this law. You can't be kind of pregnant. You either are or you're not. Avicenna, who was a Muslim philosopher, said this about the law of non-contradiction. And this is important because people do this all the time. thinking that, oh, well, we can have contradictory truths, that's no problem. Well, this is what he proposed that we do to them. Anyone who denies the law of non-contradiction should be beaten and burned until he admits that to be beaten is the same as not to be beaten, and to be burned is the same as not to be burned. Now, that might be a little extreme, but it might get rid of a lot of nonsense as well. That's the first one. Now, there's one more, and that is the law of the excluded middle. And once again, that sounds big and complicated. It's not. All it means is that either something is or it is not. There's not some third option out there. You can't be kind of pregnant. You can't have both. It's either yes or it's no. Either God exists or he does not. God cannot kind of exist. Either Jesus rose from the dead or he did not. There is no third option. Now, there are two philosophers that did more to bring about these weird modern notions of truth than any other. The first is David Hume. He lived about the time that our nation was founded, and so this has been around for a while. And he gave the following formula for finding truth, and he did it because he was an atheist. He hated the Bible. In fact, he proposed as he was writing this formula that because the Bible cannot meet the standard, what we ought to do is just use it for firewood. That's all it's good for. He said, this is the only way you can find truth. Propositions can only be meaningful if they meet one of two conditions. Either it's abstract reasoning, such as a mathematical equation or a definition. 2 plus 2 equals 4, that's a mathematical equation. Or all triangles have three sides, that's a mathematical definition. That's what he's talking about. So it's either true because of that, or it's something that can be verified empirically using one or more of the five senses, the scientific method. So either it's true by definition, or it is something that we can use the scientific method to find out. That is the only way you can find out what truth is. Now, he didn't realize that this opens him up to a very major problem with his theory. Is his theory true by definition? No, it's not. It's not mathematical abstract reasoning. It's not true by definition. Well, can we use science to verify his theory? No, we can't do that either. And so, therefore, what Mr. Hume would have us believe is actually nonsense. Now, most college professors will stroke when you bring this up, because this is the basis of a lot of secular humanism, that we can only find truth in this way, and talking about the Bible is just talking about faith, and it's nonsense. No, unfortunately, Mr. Hume's books would make very good firewood, but the Bible can survive this test. Now, the outer one is Immanuel Kant. He lived about the same time. And he's the guy that said you can't actually know anything about the real world. We just have our own perception of the real world. And so your perception can differ from my perception, and so we can have all of these contradictory truths, because nobody really knows what's going on anyway. Now, does Mr. Kant claim to know something about the world? Yes, he does. He claims that you can't know anything about it. And so once again, his theory is nonsense. And yet, the majority of the smart people of our day believe this over the truth. So how is it we're going to find this truth anyway, since these propositions won't work? We use the tools God gave us. Logic and observation. That's really all there is to it. It is that simple. We cannot use logic by itself. That can get us into trouble. For example, we study this reasoning in school. You've probably seen it. If you haven't, you will. All men are mortal. Dave is a man. Therefore, Dave is mortal. Well, that works because it is valid. But as you'll see, you can get yourself in trouble using only this. Because if you start out with a premise that's wrong, it'll lead you to a place that is also wrong. All men have four arms. Dave is man. Therefore, Dave has four arms. I didn't know that about you, but apparently that's true, and I used logic to get to it. You see, there's a problem with our first premise, isn't there? Now, if we use logic plus observation, we won't go astray. All books have at least one author. How do I know this? Because I went to the library, and every single book I looked at had a person on the title page that was named as the author, at least one. Sometimes there were three or four. This is a book. I have it up here. It's bound together. That's based on observation. I can see what it is. I can touch it. I can feel it. Therefore, this book has at least one author. It is that easy to determine what truth is using the tools God gave us, our logic, plus the observations we can make about the real world. Now, since we can find out what truth is using this method, I want to point out that truth in religion does matter. In fact, it matters more than anything else, because our morality determines every single thing that we are going to do. Who wants to live their entire life based upon a lie? Christianity isn't true, is true. Well, then a lot of people are in big trouble, because Christianity says there's some bad things that are going to happen to them in the end because they've ignored it. Now, if Christianity is not true, well, we're wasting our time, and a lot of other people are too. If the Quran is true, then those of us who aren't Muslims are in big trouble. If the atheists are right, we might as well lie and cheat and steal and do whatever we want to do and get it all out of this life, because that's all there's going to be. All of these things are subject to the kind of investigation that I have been laying before you. If you go to John chapter 14, you're going to see, as we did at the beginning of the lesson, Jesus claimed to have the truth. In fact, he claimed it in very certain terms. Jesus said to him, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me." Now, either that statement is true or it is not. But it is possible for us to evaluate that claim. In fact, it is essential that we evaluate that claim and any like it, because we want to know what the truth is, not in every other matter except religion, but especially in religion. We're going to end up here the same place we ended up the last time I spoke on matters related to this, and that's in Acts chapter 17. And what we're going to see in Paul's sermon here to the Athenians, that he was talking to people who did not believe in the true God. He was trying to tell them about the true God, and he makes a lot of truth claims. We're going to begin reading in verse 24. "God, who made the world and everything in it, since he is Lord of heaven and earth, does not dwell in temples made with hands, nor is he worshipped with men's hands as though he needed anything, since he gives to all life, breath, and all things. And he has made from one blood every nation of men to dwell on the face of the earth, and has determined their preappointed times and the boundaries of their dwellings, so that they should seek the Lord in the hope that they might grope for him and find him, though he is not far from each one of us. For in him we live and breathe and have our very being. Also, as some of your own poets have said, we are also his offspring. Therefore, since we are the offspring of God, we ought not to think that the divine nature is like gold or silver or stone, something shaped by art of man's devising. Truly, these times of ignorance God overlooked, but now commands all men everywhere to repent, because he has appointed a day on which he will judge the world in righteousness by the man whom he has ordained. He has given assurance of this to all by raising him from the dead." Now, we're not going to do it now, but if you go back and look at this and start counting, there is truth claim after truth claim after truth claim. Paul is saying, this is the way the world really is, this is the way God really is, and this is the way the world is going to be, and you are going to be after it's over. Either God is or He is not. Either His Son is Jesus or He is not. Either He was raised from the dead or He is not. All of these things are subject to the kind of investigation that we were talking about earlier. We can know the truth. And it is essential for us to know the truth, especially in religion. Now, if you notice verse 32, "And when they heard the resurrection of the dead, some mocked, while others said, 'We will hear you again on this matter.'" Some of them there recognized that the claims Paul was making were worthy of a second look. They were worthy of investigation. Because if he's right, that has tremendous consequences for the way they would need to live their lives. And if he's wrong, it would as well. Same is true tonight. The question I want to ask as we are closing is, are you willing to risk it if these things are true? If there is going to be a day in which God is going to judge the world based upon our obedience to the Son He sent, who was raised from the dead, are you willing to live your life risking that, well, maybe it's all just a big lie? Wouldn't it be smarter to investigate, to find out what the truth really is, and to do it? We would like to help you in that tonight. If you are interested in learning more about Jesus, we will be happy to study with you. We will be happy to talk to you about these things and show you what we are convinced is the truth about Jesus Christ and how we ought to live. If you see the need to obey Him even tonight, we want to encourage you to come down and do that as we stand and sing together.